Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is of Udazara Daf Ayin Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara will be continuing with the topics discussed earlier, and that has to do with how one is machshir, one who kashers wine presses that had been used by Gentiles for the manufacture of their wine, and now a Jew wants to process kosher wine. The goal will be to remove from the Gentile wine press any residue of wine that may have been there beforehand. The first piece of Gemara that we'll be dealing with at the upper part of Ayin Hey, Omid Aleph, deals with wine presses that are either dry or wet. And depending on their status, the method of ridding or of purging it of the residual wine will depend. We will also encounter, as far as the markings are concerned, two lashonos. Those are illustrated by a Roman numeral 1 and 2 that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. The first lashon being that of the Pupadisa, the Sura school, that is, and the second lashon being that of the Pupadisa school. Within each lashon, within Sura, you will see a Machlokes, Rav, and Shmuel. And Rav and Shmuel are indicated by a double underline. And also in the Pupadisa version, you will see a Machlokes, Bei Rav, in the name of Rav and Shmuel, similarly indicated by the double underline. Sura and Pupadisa were both locations or centers of Talmudic learning in the times of the Gemara. So, without any further ado, let us turn to the Gemara. Third line from the top at the end of the line, Itmar, Bei Rav, Mishmei de Rav, Amri, Tarti, Tlas. Ushmuel Omar Tlas Dalid. According to Rav, if you're dealing with a press that is damp, then there are applications of two substances, or let's say two applications, one of which is aphir, is ash, that will absorb the initial dampness, and mayim, and then water to rinse off the ash that was used. If it's a dry press that the Gentile had and the Jew now is going to take over and use it, then there are three applications. You start off with mayim, with water, and then ash, and then a final water. According to Shmuel, who said Dalid Hey 4-5, if you're dealing with a damp press, so then according to Shmuel, let's just correct this detail we just mentioned. According to Shmuel, it's 3-4, as opposed to Rav, who said 2-3. According to Shmuel, it's 3-4 within the Sura Lashon, the first Lashon. How do we figure 3? Well, if it's a damp press, so there will be Afer, ash, an initial ash application to absorb the dampness, the residual wine of the Gentiles' press, and then a water application to rinse off that Afer, and then another AFER application. If you're dealing with a dry press, then you'll get to the number Dalet, or 4. How does that figure? It'll be water, AFER, water, and AFER. It's pointed out that according to this version, and that's the Gemara itself says, Besura Masnu Hachi. You can see we've squiggle underlined that. We often use a squiggle underline to highlight when you have several alternatives, different alternatives in a Gemara, the alternatives representing whatever. In this case, we have alternative approaches to the Machlokis Rav and Shmuel. So we've squiggle underlined Besura Masnu Hachi, and you can see also Bepumbadisa Masnu, the next line, which will be the second version. It is pointed out, though, that within the Surah Lashon, there is a Machlokis Rav and Shmuel, whereby Shmuel says that for all cleansing processes, you need to have a double AFER application. We've also provided for your convenience a chart that accompanies this particular explanation, which, by the way, follows Rashi's first Lashon. Rashi himself presents two Lashonos in explaining this sugya. This conforms to the first Lashon in Rashi. On our chart, we've also indicated with little bullets under Shmuel's name, under the Surah Lashon, the presence of two AFER applications, both in the Retivta and the Yovesh presses. Let us continue in the Gemara. Besura Masnu, in Pumbadisa Masnu, in Pumbadisa we have another version. Bei Rav Amri Mishmei de Rav Plas Dalid 3-4 and Ushmuel Omar Dalid Hey. Let's go over the 3-4 according to Rav under the Pumbadisa heading. The 3 is accounted for by in a damp press, Afer, Mayim, and then Afer. In the dry press, you'll have Mayim, Afer, Mayim, Afer. When you look at Rav, you'll notice that at the final application is Afer. There is no water added to rinse things off. Shmuel said 4-5. Shmuel in the Retivta requires 4. It's Afer, Mayim, Afer, and then Mayim. We notice here that we've squiggled online the Mayim. That's to bring out the point that Shmuel requires a final, or Shmuel mentions a final rinsing. Rav did not mention a final rinsing. It's not that Rav doesn't acknowledge that one ought to have a final rinsing, and this is pointed out by Rashi that there's no fundamental machlokes in this lashon, in the Pumbadisa lashon, between Rav and Shmuel. All that is different is that Shmuel makes mention of the final rinsing, which Rav doesn't bother listing. And finally, the hay, the 5 that Shmuel accounts for, that's if you're dealing with a dry press. So then you'll see you have a Mayim, Afer, Mayim, Afer, and then final Mayim application. But as we said, the Shmuel, in mentioning 5, doesn't fundamentally disagree with Rav's 4 in the dry press. The only difference being is that Rav doesn't bother mentioning the final rinsing, and Shmuel does mention the final Mayim, final rinsing. And that's what the Gemara says here. It says velo pligi. According to Rashi, this velo pligi means that within the Pumbadisa Lashon, there is no machlokis between Rav and Shmuel. Mar ko choshiv maya basroi. Shmuel mentions the final rinsing. Umar lo ko choshiv maya basroi. And Rav does not mention in his listing the final water rinsing. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading with a Mivneh note, a structural note. This accompanies the presence of a new geometric form, a diamond with a colored-in tip. This is explained on the side, Sidra, Shel, Chelke, Hagas, Vitzuras, Hachshorosam. We'll have a the honey word represents a word that we'll be repeating, introducing a series of different parts of wine presses and the way, the method of machshir them, the method of kashering them when one acquires these different vessels and utensils from a Gentile who had used it previously for his Gentile wine processing. Honey, gurgi, darmoi, mai. As far as the translations of all of the different utensils mentioned in this sugya, and there will be quite a few, we recommend, after consulting Rashi, who makes mention in his commentary, who uses French words to explain a number of the different items, we also recommend additionally consulting a reliable English translation for the meaning of the different expressions. In the context of our shiur, we are not going to be focusing on the translations of the different items, but rather on the method of kashering them. So here we're talking about gurgi darmoi. Armoi is a reference to Gentiles. Gurgi, Rashi refers to them as the akolim, one of the different items used in processing grapes. My, Moore's question here is, how does one do niguv to them? Omar le Rabbi Avo tenisua. We can learn how the gurgi darmoi, the akolim, are kashered. We mentioned the word niguv. This is an expression Rashi uses. The expression niguv is a reference to the afer mayim process. And as we go on in the Tanaic source, we'll see that akolim are referred to specifically. In other words, in the Gemara used in the question, the Gemara used the term gurgi darmoi, how are they kashered? In the source, on the third line of the source, you can see a dashed underline word, that's the word that we're looking for, v'akolim. In this source, different types of materials are used in making akolim, and depending on the material, will also depend on how they are to be kashered. So, our question essentially is, how are gurgi darmoi to be kashered? So, Omar de Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo responds to the one raising the question, Tenisua, derive or conclude your question from the following Tanaic source. Now, this Tanaic source does not deal directly with Gentile wine presses. It deals rather with a wine press or an olive press that was used and was tome, was ritually impure, and the owner wants to use it now in a tohor state. He wants to process things that will be tohor. So, how does he cleanse it from its state of tumah? How does he remove the tumah liquids and prepare it for being used in tahara, in a state of purity? At the end of the source, the last line of the source says, "Kederach shamru b'taros," as was said in taros, because this source focuses on taros. Kach omru b'yayin esach. The same procedure shall be used for yayin esach. And what we've done is we've dashed underline that final expression of the source, because this is really why the source is brought in, to bring out the kashering process for yayin from its previous use with yayin esach. So let us continue now with the source itself. Hare shehoyu gasov ubeis badov tameim. Gasov is the wine presses, and beis badov the olive presses. They have been tome. Ubikesh la soison betara. Now he wants to convert them into tohor, into tohor wine presses. Now the, as we mentioned earlier, a number of different utensils are mentioned. Consult an English translation for the exact translations. Hadapim v'hadoshim v'aluvin adichon. These different elements, it's sufficient to rinse them off. V'ho'akolim. The akolim is what we are focused on right now because we brought the source in as a result of the question of how are the gurgi darmoi kashered. So here we're talking now about the gurgi, the akolim. Well, it depends on what material they are made. So the first group of materials we've listed as aleph include shel nitzorim v'shel batzputz. If you have akolim made of nitzorim or batzputz material, minagvon, then you would apply the Afer Mayim method, the ash water method that was discussed earlier on the Omid. However, if the Akolim are made of Vishal Shifa, Vishal Gemi, Miyashnon Yud Beis Chodesh, there it's necessary to have them sit in disuse for 12 months. Rashi points out that these materials are more absorbent than the previous materials, the Netzorim and Batzputz, and hence you need to have a more severe or drastic cleansing process, and that will be accomplished by leaving it in a state of non-use for 12 months. It'll completely dry out. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Manichon migas legas umibad lebad. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, leave them in a state of disuse from season to season. Now, it's worth pointing out that the grapes had a singular harvest season, likewise olives, a singular season in which they were harvested and processed. So, Rav Shimon is saying, leave it over from one season to the next. Well, the Gemara now interrupts with a question, and we have indicated the fact that this is a Gemara interruption with a brackets, but we'll read it straight through. That having been said, the Gemara asks, "Hainu Tanakama, what is Rav Shimon Gamliel saying that's different from the Tanakama? The Tanakama said leave it in a state of disuse for 12 months. Well, isn't that the same thing as leaving it over from one season to the next? Meaning that the season this year, and when you get to next year's season, it'll be a year later." The Gemara answers, there is a difference. Iko binayu churfi v'afli. It depends. If according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, who did not use the expression 12 months, he wasn't focusing on the calendar per se, but rather on the crops. So there will be a difference if you have if the next season is a churfi, for example, is an early bloomer, so you'll in effect have less than 12 months going by. Or if it's afli, if it's a late bloomer, then you'll have more than 12 months that go by between the seasons. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Horeitza L'Taron Miyad, if one wants to cleanse or purge his impure presses immediately, he doesn't want to wait all this time. Magilon B'Roishin, he can boil them with boiling water, O Cholton B'Mei Zesim, or apply to them hot olive water. The Mei Zesim is derived by boiling olives, which is something that is practiced prior to the pressing of them to extract their oil. They are heated up. One would then take the water from that process where you had boiled up the olives and pour it over these different utensils. And that will purge it of the tome liquids that had been there. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Yossi Omer, Manichon Tachas Tzinor Shememov Mekalchin. Another approach is to place these vessels or utensils under a pipe that has running water, and the running water will purge them of the impurity. Oy B'mayon Shememov Rodfin, or in a rushing stream. One would place these utensils in a rushing stream, and that will purge them, these utensils of their tomei liquids. v'kama, how much time is one expected to leave these leave the utensils in the running water? Oina. The term oina will be explained three lines later in the Gemara itself, where the Gemara asks kama oina. So for right now, we'll just say it's a measure of time. We see a bracketed section. This section is bracketed because that which is featured here is inaccurate. After the brackets, you have the correct version. And we read that before, but we can skip again and just read that now. It says, "Kederach Shamru B'Taros," as was said by Taros, which is what we were discussing till now, the method of purification from a state of Tuma to a state of Tara. Kach Omru B'Yayin Esach, thusly one would practice with regard to cleansing it from the Gentile wine residue in order to make it available or ready for kosher wine processing. Turning to the bracketed section, the Gemara's the source would have been saying, "Kederech she'omru b'yayin esach," as one does by yayin esach, "kach omru b'taros," so too one would practice with regard to making it tohor from a state of tumah. So to this, the Gemara says, "Klapi laya, where are you going? B'taros kaiminon." The source itself featured taros. In other words, we don't use yayin esach as a jumping off point to learn about taros. We're featuring taros. The focus of this source was taros. Elo, the more accurate presentation would be kederech shamru b'taros, as was taught in taros, namely as we just got finished learning in this entire source. Kach omru b'yayin esach, thusly would be practiced when one wants to kosher his wine press, which was previously used by a Gentile for his unkosher wine. We mentioned in the source that if one chooses, according to Rabbi Yossi, one can do a rapid purging by placing it under the flow of water coming from a pipe, or put the utensils in a rushing stream. And the Brisa had asked, well, how long would that be? Would it be necessary to leave them there? And it answered, ona. The Gemara asks, kama ona? How long is an ona? Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. We'll see here two versions of this, of the answer presented. The first version is oy yoim oy laila, a day or a night. Rav Chana Sheina the Amri La, Rav Chana Bar Sheina Omar Rabba Bar Chana Rabbi Yochanan. Here we have a second version of Rabbi Yochanan. Chatsi yoim, the chatsi laila. An ona is measured by the amount of time of half a day and half a night. Omar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak v'loy pligi. These two lashonos that we've listed, or we've noted as one and two, namely one said o yoim o laila, and number two said chatsi yoim chatsi laila, are not in disagreement with one another. In effect, they're both saying 12 hours. But how do you express 12 hours? So, ha, betkufas nisan v'tishrei, the first lashon that says day or night, is talking in the spring season or the fall season, when the amount of when daylight and night, and lack of light, namely nighttime, are more or less equal. Therefore, we can say you have a balanced day-night. So you could say, in order to express 12 hours, either day or night. However, the second lashon, which said chatzi yom chatzi laila, ha betkufas tamuz v'teves. Tkufas tamuz is the summer, and tkufas teves the winter. So in the winter time, for example, you'll have a very short amount of daylight and a long amount of nighttime. So if just for illustration purposes, we were to say you have 6 hours of daylight and 18 hours of night, well, you take half of the six is three hours of daylight, and half of 18 is nine. So you take three and nine, and add it together, you get 12. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Hani Revoki Darmoi. Another vessel that was used in the processing of wine. They're translated as sediment sacks. And I'm interested in now converting them from their unkosher use, from their yayin nesech use, into making them useful or available for kosher wine production. So here it depends on how the koshering is to be done, depends on of what material these sediment sacks are made of. Demazia, if they're made of human hair, then madichon. Human hair is not considered a very highly absorbent material. It's therefore sufficient to rinse them off. De amra, if they're made of wool, menagvon. Menagvon is the afer mayim process. And finally, de kisna, if it's made of linen, miyashnan. Then you would leave them over for 12 months. The iiko katri shori lehu. If they are knotted, so in order to ensure a thorough purging, one would have to undo the knots. Hani dekuli v'chalosa darmoi. Basket-like or beehive-shaped utensils that are used in the wine processing. If you have the dekuli or chalosa darmoi, darmoi, as we've mentioned before, as a reference to the Gentiles, dechaiti bechavli ditzuri. If they're sewn with ropes of palm fibers, then madichon. It's sufficient to rinse them off. The tzafsa, if they're made of tzafsa material, if they're sewn together with tzafsa, then lenagvon. You would have to do the efer mayim processing. And the kisna, if they're made of linen, if they're sewn together with linen threads, then miyashnan. The e is bukitri, if there are knots, shori lehu, then one would be expected to undo the knots and then to do the cleansing process. As we go further in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading. We can glance at the outside margin and see the nosei, negias tumo besoich mokoim besoich mokoim schitas anovim v'zeisim v'hevdeil b'nehem. We're referring here to the contact of tumah, where there's a contact of tumah with in an area that grapes or olives are being pressed, and the Gemara will feature a distinction between them. Itmar am ha'oretz shehoishit yodoy legas, and am ha'oretz is a person who is viewed as being tomei. Who put his hand, who touched a gas, a press, the noga beshkolos, and made contact with grape clusters. And the grape clusters are lying in a liquid environment of juice, grape juice or wine. Rebbe v'Rebbe Chia. There's a machlokis, Rebbe and Rebbe Chia, what happens with regard to the tumantara. Chad Omar Eshko v'chol svivoysov tameim v'chol hagas kula tahora. The Eshkol, the cluster that the Amoretz touched, and the immediate surroundings are tamei, but the rest of the press, the rest of the area, including all the other clusters and liquids around them, are tahor, are not affected. V'chad Omar kol hagas kula nami tameya. The second opinion says that the entire area is affected as well. The fact that the Amoretz touched one area affects the entire press. Ulaman di Omar, the Gemara now asks a question, will last a few lines. You can see the length is indicated by a long question marking, a kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, Ulaman do Omar Eshkol v'chol svivoysov tameim v'chol agas kula tahora. This was the first opinion. Mai shno meha disnan. What we've done with our markings, we've emphasized the kula tahora part of his teaching, because we want to contrast this point with a source that deals with something of a similar nature, and the end of this source will have a similar dashed underline where you'll see it says Hakol Tomeh. So we're asking now, according to the first opinion that said that only the immediate point of contact with the Tuma, with the Am Oretz, is affected, but the rest remains Tohor, my Shno Mehodisnan, what is different about the wine press and grape clusters from the following source? Sheretz Shenimsa Berechayim. Sheretz is a dead creature that imparts in its death, it imparts Tuma. And it's found in a rechayim, in a place that olives are ground before they're put into their press. So we have a sheretz found there, and it says, "Eino mitame elo mokom ago." The sheretz affects only that which it came into contact with. However, v'im hoyo mashkin mahalich, if the olives are in a liquid environment, in other words, it's liquidy, it's around all of the olives as well, then Hakol Tomei, the fact that the sheretz comes into contact with one point doesn't prevent the tuma from spreading through the liquid environment to all of the other olives. So very simply put, if you focus on the markings, you can see here we've emphasized Hakol Tomei, and the case involving grape clusters in their liquid environment, we said that the rest of the area is tohar. The Gemara answers there's a fundamental difference. Hosam lo mifsik v'lo midi. In the case of the rechayim with the olives, there is nothing blocking the liquid environment from spreading from the area that the sheretz touched to all of the other olives there. There's nothing blocking, and hence the tuma spreads throughout the water or throughout the liquid that connects all of the different all of the olives there. Hocha, in the case of grape clusters, mifsiki eshkolos. The nature of grape clusters is that they're densely packed, so to speak, so that the mass of grape clusters in effect forms a blockage or a type of dam, if you will, from the blocking the liquid from spreading its the tuma to all of the other grape clusters in that vat. The Rashi at the upper part of the page says lo mifsik midi. In the case of the olives, shamashke mechabram, the liquid it serves to attach all of them together. Ubezesim ein eshkolos. And when you're looking at olives, you're looking at individual fruits. You're not looking at clusters. And therefore, in the case of the olives, the tuma has an easy time spreading, as opposed to a vat full of grape clusters, which in effect form a type of dam, stopping the liquid from having contact with the rest of the grape clusters. Ori le rabbanan the Rabbi Yirmiya, v'amri la lebrei the Rabbi Yirmiya, k'divrei ha'oimer eshkol v'chol svivoysov temein v'chol agas kula Torah. The rabbanan issued a ruling to Rabbi Yirmiya, or another version says to the son of Rabbi Yirmiya, like the first opinion, that when the Amorites touched the grape cluster, it's only it and its immediate surroundings becomes Tomei, but the rest of the press remains Tohar. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a new topic that accompanies this new Mishnah. The general topic is Tevilas Kelim, the immersion of vessels that one acquires from Gentiles. In addition to that, we will see Hachshoras Kelim Shenirkashu Migoyim, the kashering of vessels. There's a difference between Tevila and Hechsher. Hechsher, we can describe as being a practical method of removing that which was unkosher, that which was absorbed in the vessels owned by Gentiles that had absorbed unkosher food substances. Now I want to use it as for kosher food preparation. I have to machshir them. In addition to that, there's a process that's called tevila, immersing the previously owned Gentile vessels, now acquired by Jews, in a mikveh, in a mikveh of 40 sa'ah, which is we'll refer to it a type of ritual cleansing that is necessary as well. The Mishnah, halokeach kli tashmish min ha'oivdei kechavim. One acquires utensils from Gentiles. Es shedarko lahatbil yadbil. Rashi points out at the upper part of the page, es shedarko lahatbil klomar kli haroi litoyer betvila ein tzorech tikun acher. A vessel that is suitable to be cleansed through immersion doesn't require anything else. Kigon kli shetashmisha de tzonein. Yatbil vesulo tzorach, a vessel that was used for cold substances. In other words, it was never placed on the fire. It's used for, the Gentile used it for cold drinks, cups and the like, that were used for cold food items. Nothing beyond immersion in a mikveh is necessary. Continuing in the Mishnah, a second category of vessels is lahagil, vessels that were used for boiling. Then yagil, it's necessary to boil out the vessel itself before it can be used for kosher food. Lelabim b'or, vessels that were exposed to open fire, things like grills and spits. If you want to kosher them, you want to make them suitable for kosher food production or food preparation, then yelabim b'or, you take the vessel itself, the grill or the spit, and subject it to an open fire. Hashpud va'askilo milabnon bor, and the Mishnah provides examples of this third category, the shpud, a spit, and askilo, a grill. They have to be fired up in a fire before they can now be used for the preparation of kosher food. Hasakin, the way one enables a knife to be used for, that was previously used for unkosher food, now I want to make it suitable for kosher food cutting or preparation. Shofa, the heat, tori, you scrape it, and that renders it fit. Tona, we have a Tanaic source that mentions v'chulon tzrichin tevila barboim sa'ah. All of the aforementioned examples, those examples mentioned in the Mishnah, in other words, things that were used, vessels that were used by goyim for cooking up, for boiling up food. The Mishnah said you've got to boil out the vessel itself. In addition to that, one has to immerse the vessel in a mikveh. And likewise, with regard to those items used on open fires, like the grills and spits, in addition to the utensil being fired up to purge it from any absorbed unkosher food, there also has to be an immersion in a mikveh of 40 sa. 40 sa being a quantity of water. Minohani mili, from where do we know that in addition to purging the vessels of the absorbed unkosher food substances, that they have to be immersed in a mikveh? Omar rova, the Omar kro. The pasuk says, in this pasuk is featured in the, which we can call clay midyon, in Bamidbor, in the Torah, Sefer Bamidbor, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chof Gimel, which features a story in which the Jewish people defeated the Midianites in battle, and they took a lot of spoils in that battle. So the Torah mentions how one has to treat the different food utensils that they acquired from the Midianites before they could be used for by themselves. The pasuk says, "Kol dovar asher yovoi bo'esh, taviru bo'esh, v'toher." The Pasuk says things that were exposed to fire, as we mentioned before, things that were used to cook up food in fire, so you have to expose the vessel itself to fire. And then the Pasuk adds what seems to be an extra word, vitoher. Hoisif lo hakosuv taharo acheres. There seems to, the Pasuk is adding an additional tahara. This is explained a bit further as we go on in the Gemara. Toni bar Kapora. Bar Kapora offers a Tanaic source. This is a source that quotes from the same Pasuk, which we've included on the side of our Gemara as well. You can see the Pasuk in Bamidbar, Lamid Aleph Pasuk Chav Gimel. It says, first we'll read the Pasuk, Kol davar asher yavoi bo'esh, taviru bo'esh, v'toher. Ach b'mei nido yischata, v'chol asher lo yavoi bo'esh, taviru b'mayim. The source that Bar Kapora teaches reads as follows, Mitoch shenemar b'mei nido. Shomeani shitzor hazo shlishi ushvi. The expression mei nido is characteristic of the way that things that were tomei meis achieve their tahara. And tahara for things that were tomei meis, that were ritually impure by contact with the dead, require the sprinkling of pora aduma water, the red heifer water, ash water mixture, on a third and seventh day after the tahara days started. On the third day and seventh day, there's a sprinkling process that's referred to here as the Hazo Shlishi Ushvi. Is this the same thing with regard to the Mei Nidah found in Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, where we're dealing with getting vessels from the Goyim? Talmud Lomar Ach Chalok. The Pasuk uses the word Ach before the introducing the expression Mei Nidah. The Pasuk said Ach B'Mei Nidah. The word Ach Chalok is a limitation word. By this we mean that you don't need to wait. An entire week and have a sprinkling done on the third and seventh day. Imkein ma tamalomar b'mei nidah. So, why does the Torah use the expression mei nidah? Answer: b'mayim shenidah toveles bohen. It's a reference to the water that a nidah woman. This is a woman who experiences her monthly cycle. And when after the appearance of the dam during that monthly cycle, she eventually, without getting into the details, she eventually immerses herself in a mikveh. So the expression mei nidah here is a reference to the type of water source that a nidah woman immerses herself in. Let's read this again. Mayim shenida toivelas bohen heve omer arboim sa. That's a reference to a mikveh of 40 sa'ah. At this point in the Gemara, we see that the Klei Midyan are subjected to immersion in a mikveh from the expression Mei Nidah, but we also saw, right before Bar Kapora's source was introduced, the word Vitoher, which indicated the mikveh. So we seem to have a double reference to the need for immersing the previously owned Gentile vessels. The Gemara points out that there is no redundancy. Itzrich lemichta v'toher, v'itzrich lemichta b'mei nidah. I need to have both of these expressions. Ikosa v'toher, had the Torah used only that expression, havamina v'toher b'choldehu, that tahara, ritual purity of Gentile vessels could be achieved through immersing in any amount of water, namely even in a mikveh choser, a mikveh that doesn't have 40 saw. Therefore, kosav rachmona b'mei nidah, to ensure that you have a mikveh of 40 saw. We mentioned before, 40 saw is a quantity of water. 40 saw is necessary. The kosav rachmona b'mei nidah, had the Torah used only that expression, havi amino herev shemesh kenida, I would have thought that the vessel would have to wait till sunset before I can use it, just like we have in the case of a nida. Kosav rachmona v'toher. Therefore, the Torah uses the word v'toher, which means la'alter, immediate, meaning as soon as the Gentile vessel is immersed in the mikveh, it becomes useful. Of course, assuming that all the other necessary purging procedures have been applied. Once it's been purged of any absorbed unkosher food, it's immersed in the mikveh and useful immediately. No need to wait till sundown. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Ravua, Afilu Kelim Chadoshim B'mashma. The law being taught here about the need for mikveh immersion concerning Gentile vessels includes brand new vessels. Brand new vessels, namely vessels that were never used by the Gentile. The necessity of immersing in a mikveh has nothing to do with purging it of unkosher food. That's what Rav Nachman is telling us. We just got finished discussing used vessels, old vessels that were then that needed a purging process. Velivnon means they were subjected to an open fire, they were fired up. Once you have a vessel that's been even though it was a used, an old vessel, but it was exposed to the fire, it was fired up, it's been totally purged of anything, of any unkosher food absorbed in them, they can be considered like new, the afilu hachi boi tvila, and even so, they require tvila. So we see from the fact that purged vessels need to be immersed, that the immersion has nothing to do with the actual purging process, and as a result of that, we can conclude that which Rav Nachman said, that even new vessels have, that one acquires from a Gentile, have to be immersed in a mikveh. It's almost as if we're saying that not only do people go through a conversion process, which we mean that in part of the conversion process is immersion in a mikveh, even the vessels one acquires from Gentiles have to go through a type of conversion process, being immersed in a mikveh. Maskif lo Rav Sheshes. E hachi, if you're telling us that the mikveh process is necessary even for new vessels, in other words, it has nothing to do with the purging of absorbed unkosher food substances, then afilu zuza desar balonami, even a wool shears, a scissors that one buys from goyim, from Gentiles, should be immersed in a mikveh. And we know that that's not the case. Amale, so he answers, klei su'uda amurin b'parsha. The Torah mentions food vessels. Klei su'uda are food vessels. The fact that the Torah mentions kol asher yovo bo'esh, in the pasuk that we read before, pasuk Chof Gimel, it said all those vessels that are exposed to the fire. It's assumed that only food preparation vessels are those that are exposed to the fire. Non-food vessels are, generally speaking, not exposed to fire. Pots or spits and grills, those are vessels that are exposed to fire. And you'll find that it's only food preparation vessels that have that characteristic. Hence, I know from the fact that the pasuk says kol asher yovo bo'esh that we are, that this parsha of cleansing vessels and subsequent immersion in a mikveh is talking about food vessels alone, to the exclusion of wool shears, etc. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avua, lo shanu ela belekuchin uchamaisa shahoya. The halachas that we've been describing about the necessity of immersing vessels, even if they're new vessels, in a mikveh, that's only in a case that you are buying a new vessel from the Gentile and acquiring it as your own, as was the case in the Battle of Midian, where the Jews acquired the vessels as their own. However, if you're dealing with borrowed vessels, then as long as they're totally clean from unkosher food, there's no need to immerse a borrowed Gentile's vessel. Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Zovan Mono de Mardo Me'ove Kichovim. Rav Yitzchak purchased a vessel, a mona is a vessel made of Mardo. Mardo is a vessel made of mud or dirt and animal feces mixed in. So he bought a vessel made of this material. Sovar lahadbilo, he had in mind to immerse this mona de marda. Omarle hahu mirabonan Rav Yankiv shmei. One of the Rabbonin said to him, and Rav Yankiv is his name, Ledidi, for Shalmine, the Rabbi Yochanan was explained to me by Rabbi Yochanan, Kli Matchos Amurin Beparsha. Metal vessels is what the Torah is addressing as far as needing immersion. In the Torah, in Pasuk Chav Beis, namely the Pasuk just before the Pasuk we read before, we've included this pasuk as well on the side of the Gemara. You can see it says there, "Ach es hazov, es hakesiv, es hanachoshes, es habarzel, es abdil, ve'es ha'oferes." All of these are different types of metals. So the parsha in Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, pasuk Chaf Beis, which is then followed by pasuk Chaf Gimel, which talks about the immersion, and the mikvah is featuring metallic vessels. In our markings, we've used diamonds to highlight that which we've noted on the side, Havlotas Chomorim Deboinon Tfila, the emphasis of different metals, different materials, including metals, different materials that require immersion. So the first list, or the first group, is metals. Omar Rav Ashi, Hani Kli Zechuchis, glass, Hoyo Vechi Nishtabru Yeshlan Takona, Kikli Matchis Domul. Glass, if they break, one can subject them to intense heat and, in effect, melt the glass and thereby repair it. One can take a broken piece of glass and, as we just mentioned, through exposure to heat, melt the glass down and repair the crack. Therefore, it's considered similar to metal. It's just like metal can be melted down and through that be repaired, so to glass, having that characteristic, is viewed as metal with regard to the din of immersion. So therefore, one who acquires glass vessels from a Gentile would also be expected to immerse them in a mikveh. Kunya are vessels that start off as clay. They're a basic clay vessel that eventually are glazed over with a metallic based glaze. So kunya vessels, pligi bo Rav Acha Ravina. There is a machlokus between these two authorities. Chad Omar Kitchila. So one views them as they are at their outset. In other words, a glazed pottery. This opinion views as a piece of pottery, a piece of clay ware, and would not require immersion in a mikvah. The Chad Amar Kisofo, the other opinion, views it as it is in its final state, namely it's covered with a metallic-based glaze, and that would necessitate immersion in a mikvah. The Hilchasa Kisofo, the Gemara, rules that metallic-based glazed vessels require immersion in a mikvah, like Kli Matchis. We mentioned before that if only when one acquires a vessel, purchases a vessel from a Gentile, is there a need for immersion, as opposed to borrowing it. The Gemara now raises a question about a third category, Yibayelo Mashkanto Mai. What would the halacha be concerning a vessel one acquires as collateral? We should point out, by way of the markings, in order to illustrate these different levels of ownership, if you will, we've applied this crown marking, the first word that was featured was lekuchin, the second word that was featured was shulin, the first word being lekuchin, owned or purchased, shulin, borrowed, and now we have mashkanta is something that one acquires from the Gentile as a collateral, meaning that the Gentile who borrowed money offered the Jew who was lending the money a vessel, and the Jew wanted to use that vessel that he received as collateral for his own purposes. What is the din with regard to immersing a mashkon in a mikvah? Omar Mar Bravashi. Mar Bravashi relates a story involving his father, Ravashi. Abba Mishkein Le Oyvei Tichovim Kosa the Kaspa. Ravashi once received, after extending a loan to a Gentile, a silver goblet from the Gentile, the Atbele, the Ishtibe. He then immersed the silver goblet and used it for his own drinking. Veloyodana, and I don't know, says the son, says Mar Ravashi, I mishum de kosavar mashkanta kizvini damyo. Is it because in principle he holds that a vessel received as collateral is like a sail? Or, in general, a mashkon is not viewed as an acquired item, but rather, in this specific case, he saw that the Gentile that borrowed money from him had no intention of paying off the loan. And because of this specific case of his non-intention of paying off the loan, Rav Ashi knew that the vessel would be his, and therefore he would be considered a full owner of it. And that's why he immersed it. So as far as the way to treat a mashkon, is a standard mashkon viewed as owned, that remains unresolved. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source, as you can see, it's framed off. And this source will feature topics and examples that we've been discussing till now. Halokeach kli tashmish min ho'ev dekochavim. One who acquires vessels for food preparation from Gentiles. Dvorim shelo nishtamish bohen matbilon vehen tahorim. Things that were vessels that were not used by the Gentile, it is sufficient to immerse them and they thereby become tohor and fit for the for Jewish use. Dvorim shenishtamish bohen al yedei tzonein. Vessels that were used, but he used them in with cold food items. Kagon koiseis v'kitonios v'sluchios. These are different types of utensils that are characteristically used with cold food items. Madichon umadbilon v'hein tahorim. It's sufficient to rinse them off from any unkosher food residue, and then immerse them in the mikveh, and with that they become fit. Dvorim shenishtamish ben ayidei chamin, vessels that were used with boiling water. In other words, the goy cooked up food in these vessels. Kagon hayoros hakumkamusin umechame chamin, names of different vessels for used in boiling up food. Magilon umadbilon veim tarim. Then one would have to magil is to boil up the vessel. Have the vessel, of course, empty. And then the Jew would boil up water and immerse this vessel in the boiled water. And after that, matbilon, immerse them in a mikveh, the hein term, and then they become useful. Dvorim shenishtamish bohen al yedei ha'ur, things that were used in open, vessels used in an open fire, kagoin hashpudim vaskolos, like spits and grills, melavnon, he has to expose the spit or the grill to an open fire until it gets red hot or white hot, and umadbilon, and then immerse them in a mikveh, vehein tahorin. The exposure to the heat, so the open fire will purge it of any absorbed food, unkosher food that's in them, and after they're purged from any unkosher absorbed food, they can then be subjected to the immersion in a mikveh, and then they become fit. V'chulan shenishtamish bohen ad shelo yadbil v'shelo yagil v'shelo yilavein. If any of these vessels were used before they were immersed or boiled out or fired up, toni chada osur v'tanyo idoch muter. What about the food? What about the food prepared in vessels that were not properly koshered? So one source says the food is osur, is forbidden, and the other one says the food is allowed. Lo kasha, there's no contradiction between these two sources. Ha keman d'omar nosin tam levgam osur. One source is reflecting the opinion that says that negative tastes that are imparted into kosher food renders the kosher food forbidden. That would be the first source. Ha keman de'omar nosein tam levgam muter. And the second source says that that which imparts a negative taste, and we're of course assuming at this moment that any absorbed taste in these Gentile vessels that would have been that would have re-emerged into the kosher food through a vessel that was not kashered beforehand, that absorbed taste would be of a negative nature. And therefore there is a daya, there is an opinion that says that no sein tam lefgam is mutter, therefore the non-kashered vessel would not affect the kosher food that's prepared in it. The Gemara continues, ulamadyam are no sein tam lefgam mutter. According to that opinion, that no sein tam lefgam is okay, then giulei oivdei kechovim de osa rachmono hechi mishkachas lo. Under what circumstances is the Torah saying that it is necessary to purge the vessels of their unkosher food? After all, we spent a lot of time referring to psukim in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chof Beis, Chof Gimel, and we saw the Torah seemed to be very concerned about purging the vessels of their unkosher food absorption. But if you're telling me that food absorption that reemerges into kosher food has no effect on the kosher food, then what is the Torah talking about when it necessitates the kashering of the vessels? Omar Rav Chiya Braid Rav Huna, Lo Osra Torah L'Kedera Bas Yuma Delav No Sein Tam Lefgam Hu. The Torah is addressing the use of a vessel that was used that very same day by the Gentile. It is true that absorbed tastes in pots, when eventually released, impart a negative taste, a tam lefgam. That's true with the exception of freshly used vessels. If the vessel was used by the Gentile that very same day and you want to use it immediately for kosher food, the taste that emerges from the absorbed taste that emerges under those circumstances will be of a positive nature, and it won't, and therefore it will not be allowed unless you cleanse it beforehand, unless you purge it beforehand. And so the Torah is referring to the purging, the cleansing of freshly used Gentile vessels. The Gemara continues by, let us read that last expression again. We mentioned Kedera Basyuma, the lav, no sein tam livgam hu. That was the circumstance that the Torah is considering as forbidden, unless you cleanse it beforehand. Mikan vi'eleich, lishteri lishteri. The Gemara is asking here, well, if that be the case, if it's not Bas Yuma, one should be allowed to use it even lechatchila. And we know that that's not the case. We know that there's a halacha across the boards that one has to cleanse vessels acquired by goyim, even if they weren't freshly used. But if you're telling me the Torah bans only the freshly used vessels unless it's kashered, why do we not accept the chatchila, meaning without any need to kasher, those vessels that were not freshly used? The Gemara answers, Gezeira Kedera Sheino Bas Yuma Mishum Kedera Bas Yuma. The Rabbanan introduced a restriction, a fence, so to speak, that states that even non-Bas Yuma vessels, even non-freshly used vessels, must be cleansed in anticipation of your acquiring a freshly used vessel. In other words, if we wouldn't impose the ban or the need to cleanse non-freshly used vessels, someone might think that he can use a freshly used vessel as well without kashering it beforehand. So as to ensure that one will kasher that which is necessary from the Torah, the Rabbanan introduced a restriction across the board stating all vessels, even non-bas yoma vessels, must be cleansed. Ve'idach, the opinion that holds that no sein tam lefgam is osir, that negative tastes that are imparted by absorbed pots are forbidden from the Torah, that the Torah itself does not allow no sein tam lefgam. He holds Kedera Bas Yoma Nami Mifgam Pogma. He holds that even a freshly used pot, the absorbed taste that emerges from the walls of the pot, or from the absorption in the pot, that itself imparts a negative taste. And therefore, when the Torah says that one must cleanse all vessels, the Torah is referring to all situations of absorption, even fresh absorption. And let us may say this a little more accurately, all absorptions, not only fresh absorption, but later on absorptions as well, absorptions that were experienced more than a day earlier. They are all grouped together as being no same time lifgam, being that he is of the opinion that even freshly used absorbed tastes are no same time lifgam. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.